Welcome to the Victorious Souls Podcast with self-love coach Danielle Burnock. Things happen in our lives that make us feel powerless. But Danielle believes that anyone can become a victorious soul by reclaiming what belongs to them, their value, their belovedness, and their God-given superpower. The Victorious Souls Podcast is dedicated to empowering you to rise up, reclaim, and embrace the change from survive to thrive as a victorious soul through the power of love. And now, here's that lady on the internet who loves you, Danielle.
Welcome to the Victorious Souls Podcast with me, your host, Danielle Burnock, that lady on the internet who loves you, connecting you to the love that heals so you can love yourself from survive to thrive. Today, I have Karen Robinson for you sharing her story, but she's a trauma survivor and a trauma recovery expert and has been for 24 years with clinical experience. She served in many professional positions. I don't want to list them all because there's so many of them. And she's the founder of Heal, Thrive, Dream. She's an author, speaker, coach, and many other things. And she's here to share her story with us today. So welcome to my podcast today, Karen. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for hosting me. I'm excited.
Well, let's start with, tell us a little bit about your childhood, your home life, your school life, whatever. What happened in your early childhood life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for the question. So my childhood was a bit tricky. My parents were not educated individuals, and there was a lot of struggle with poverty. My mom was also a trauma survivor of all kinds of abuse in her childhood. And my father was abusive. So there was domestic violence. There was child abuse in my home and just a lot of dysfunction. There wasn't any drugs or alcohol per se, but there was a lot of verbal, emotional abuse, physical abuse, and sexual abuse as well.
Hmm. Wow. But then at the age of 12, you attempted suicide. And I've been doing workshops and sharing a statistic that just, I want to cry almost every time I share it, that the second leading cause of death in children aged 10 to 14 is suicide. So what led you to attempt suicide when you were 12? What caused you to do that? And then what happened all around that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just simply was tired of feeling trapped and not feeling valued or supported in my family. There were people in my life that really deeply loved me and cared for me, but they weren't necessarily in my home. Mm. You know, my grandparents, my aunt, that, you know, friends. But in my home, the abuse was so toxic and ongoing. I was just like, I can't do this. And for many, I don't know if it had been years or months, I was hiding things in my room and thought about suicide. Like I would hide razor blades in the back of my shirt, in pockets of shirts I didn't wear very often. I would hide scissors, that kind of thing. But I was always just so like scared of blood. I was like, you know, I don't want to do this and it hurt and nothing happened. So eventually I decided that it would be pills. And since I wasn't on any medication, I took a bottle of No Name Tylenol. And my memories are a little bit fuzzy. So some things are crystal clear. Like I remember looking in the mirror and just saying, God, I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry. Tears would come down my face. And I took either one or two handfuls of the medicine. I don't remember exactly the amount. It seemed like a significant amount. And what's interesting about Tylenol, it's actually very lethal. So one of the things I often say is like, is it God that saved me? Or is it because we couldn't afford real Tylenol? It was like a no-name brand. Or maybe that was part of God's plan too. Who knows? It only let me have a no-name Tylenol. So when I went to bed after taking the medicine, I just asked God, you know, to please take me in my sleep. And of course, I woke up the next morning. I don't even think I had a sick stomach. It's hard for me to remember. All I remember is feeling angry. Like, why God? Why? And I just had this, after asking, I just had this sense of peace. And I just knew that he wanted me, you know, for some purpose. I wasn't sure at the time what the purpose was, but I knew I had a purpose. I'm like, okay, I won't try again. That's kind of the deal that we made.
Wow, that's powerful. Because it wasn't just, okay, I'll try it again. It was like, I won't try it again. It left that peace that God gave you, it left a mark on you that gave you the courage to continue to live.
Yeah, and even on the worst days, and honestly, when I think about worst days, they weren't ever as bad as that day. But even on really hard days, the thought might be fleeting, but it's never something I seriously considered again. I've never attempted again.
Wow. So what happened after you did that in your high school years, in junior high, 13, 14? What happened after that?
Yeah, so the emotional abuse continued. At some point, the physical abuse stopped. One time, my father was coming after me, and I just grabbed something. I forgot about this story. I just grabbed something off the wall. It was a calendar, and it had a metal hook that kept it hard at the top, or kept it in place. And that came out of the calendar, and I jabbed him with it, and it cut his forehead. It wasn't super deep, but it sent him a message that I was no longer going to take what he was dishing out. And he didn't hit me again after that. So that was really positive, that part. But the emotional abuse continued. And then there was neglect in the house. There wasn't food or adequate clothing for the weather. My aunt came to visit, and she was really upset because she looked in the fridge and there was nothing there. There was a pitcher of water. Sometimes we'd have a little bowl of leftover peas or something, but no real food in the fridge. So she told my mother she was going to talk to our family doctor. I don't think she knew about social services. And then the doctor met with my mother and said, look, you've got to make a change or you're going to lose your children. And so my mom, with my aunt's help, we moved into an apartment in our little town. And for the first time in my life, I was so happy. Like, it was close to school. It was close to the hockey rink. I could go to hockey games. Like, I felt like, oh, I can do stuff. I didn't feel like so trapped. And even though my mom and I had to share a room, I was really, really happy. However, my father wooed her back with lots of false promises, wooed my brother. I could not be wooed. And my mother and my brother declared they were going back, mostly my mother. My brother was really little. And I just said I wasn't going to go back. And my mother kept saying, you are. And we had this really big blowout. And when she left to go visit my father, I packed up my duffel bag. It took my boom box, and that's when I left. That's when I ran away.
Where did you go, and how long were you gone?
I never went back.
Where did you go?
I didn't go too far. I went to a phone booth, and I know that's funny to say now.
You're not Superman, are you?
Maybe. Yeah, I went to a phone, which really cracks me up now when I think back, because there was a phone in my apartment. Like, why would I just, I wasn't thinking clearly, you know? So I went to the phone booth.
How old were you?
Like maybe almost 13 and a half, maybe, or so.
Yeah, you're a child. You're a teenager, but your brain's not done. Of course you're not thinking clearly.
Right. And so I called a couple of friends, and one of them said, you know, my parents don't want to get involved with a runaway. And another friend just apologized and said her family couldn't do it as well. And then I started to get scared. So I called my aunt, who lived, this was in Canada that this was happening, in New Brunswick. My aunt lived in the States, in Maine, which is across the border. It wasn't that far. So I called her and just told her I ran away and I didn't have any place to go. So she came and picked me up. And from there, the plan was to find a foster family, because my aunt didn't really have space for me. And so I don't know what happened. Apparently, in my town, there wasn't really foster families. So, one plan, I was going to live with my English teacher, my high school English teacher. But then that didn't work out. She changed her mind last minute. And then I was supposed to live with the sisters or the nuns from the Catholic Church. And that was a little bit distressing to me. I felt like I mean, I didn't understand. I just kind of thought, well, there goes my teenage years. What are the nuns going to let me do? They're not going to let me go on dates or go to parties. Like, what kind of teenage life is this going to be? Sorry, God. And so my aunt, she says, "You're just going to stay here. We're going to make space for you." So I stayed with my aunt and uncle through high school and really excelled at school, got a full scholarship, and
Wow.
on it goes.
Wow. So what are some of the ways that that trauma affected you personally? This was situationally, you ran away, but it had to leave a mark in you emotionally, mentally. What are some of the ways that you can convey to our listeners for them to like, wow, yeah, I do that. Yeah, I got that in my life. How did it affect you?
Yeah. Well, the good news is I didn't turn to drugs or alcohol, which a lot of survivors do. I did turn to food. I've always used food as a coping skill, and thus it's been a yo-yo of losing weight, gaining weight, because it's that emotional eating is so comforting. That's been my biggest struggle. Another struggle is, that saying, looking for love in all the wrong places. I kissed a lot of frogs. I dated a lot of people who weren't healthy. Got married too fast out of college. The guy is a really nice guy, but he was a bit controlling, not a great fit for me. And then the second husband was emotionally abusive, maybe bipolar is my best guess. And that didn't work out. And I'm like, oh my gosh, my radar for relationships, despite being a therapist, is really whacked. So I really took a break and prayed and really started to study like healthy relationships in more detail than what my school gave me. I learned about red flags, yellow flags, and green flags for a relationship. And so I prayed, I manifested what kind of husband I needed, because at this point I had a child from my marriage and I also adopted a child as a single woman. So I
Wow.
really needed a man that was stable, that was faithful, that was going to be loyal and wanted to provide, because it was very hard being single, raising two little girls. And I found him, and he's everything that a biblical man that you read about in the Bible, he's that. He's not
Wow.
perfect, but he's
Yeah,
pretty
nobody
gosh
is.
darn close. He's
Okay.
pretty close.
Let me circle back to you adopted a child. How did that come to be? And were you single when you adopted her? And what led to that?
God again. I was working overseas with the Marine Corps as a federal therapist. I was counseling people in and out of deployments to Afghanistan and Iraq. And then I was helping as a side job, I was helping Americans overseas prepare for adoption and doing their home studies and just doing some training with them. And my young daughter, she says, "Mom, you help everybody else get a baby. What about us?" And I said, "Are you crazy? I'm a single mother. You are plenty." And then I get a call about 2 weeks later. This woman who's a service member, like really desperate, she stated, "I'm expecting a baby and I can't do this. Can you help me?" And so she was hoping that I could. She thought I was a related to an adoption agency, and I was, but when you're overseas, there's no agencies for Americans per se. So she would have had to go back to the States or something. And she said, "I already was turned down." So it was kind of weird, complicated. And I just said to her, I guess it was God speaking, "Well, don't worry. I will take and care for your baby." Because I didn't know what else to do. And it just came out.
Wow.
And then she told me she was due in 2 weeks.
Oh no, 2 weeks. Ooh. I can see how you're like, I really said that 2 weeks. Oh, wow.
I was like, everybody was looking at me like, what are you doing? Like, you're single, this little girl. But people overall were really supportive. So I flew into this other little country. Is it country? A little city in Japan. It was called Iwakuni. It was near a military base. And I was with the birth mother for a week before she gave birth. And I was there. And it's a decision I have never regretted, even though my daughter is now 13 and giving me lots of gray hair. I still don't regret it. I love her dearly.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really kind of amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's amazing that you did that, even with all the relationship things, and you did all the study and you became a therapist. And how did you overcome those side effects? You studied, you told me something about some lady at church. So what role did she play in here? Plus, you had told me about things called God moments. Share a little bit of those two things with us.
Mm-hmm. The woman that really stands out, I mean, there was a lot of people along my path that reached out and were helpful. But when I ran away, there's this woman from church. Oh, I should say that in my childhood, I had two grandmothers that were pretty religious. One was Catholic and one was Pentecostal. And so they used to tug on me on their beliefs and kind of like judging the other person's beliefs. So I just called myself a Christian, called it a day. But one of my best friends was attending Catholic church at the time, the mass. And she knew this woman named Van who really wanted to work with me. And she just helped me study the Bible. Like in the Catholic religion, there's sacraments that you study for and achieve. Like you learn the commandments, you learn how to pray, that you learn how about the Eucharist and the importance of the Holy Spirit. So she helped me a lot with that. She gave me my first Bible. And in it, she had inscribed, Jesus loves you and so do I.
Aww.
It was just a beautiful gift. And she helped me a lot. Yeah, so that, I mean, to me, that's a God moment. Other God moments are, you know, things like one of my clients who was a Marine. He had a really difficult childhood and then had difficulties in combat. You know, he's a survivor of all kinds of trauma. And he had such anger issues. Like my goal in therapy, honestly, was to keep him out of jail. Like he would pull a gun on people in his anger. He would jump across a desk to grab somebody at work out of anger, would lose jobs. Like, and he was so smart. And he was very religious, very spiritual, which was a mixed match, right? Kind of. We see examples of that in the Bible, too. But anyway,
yeah, when that anger gets stuck in the trauma in your brain and you're just stuck in that fight mode, it's like on. It's like the switch is on all the time.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And so I tell people, and it's not an exaggeration, my biggest goal with him is to keep him out of jail, help him release his trauma, his triggers. We just did a lot of work together. And a God moment was he had signed up for seminary, and not only did he graduate, he went on to get his PhD. And during our last session together, I felt the Holy Spirit through my whole body. And he, one of the things he said to me was, he goes, I lost my anger. I learned how to see Jesus in others. Like I really learned what that means to see Jesus in others. So you can't hate and hurt people when you see Jesus in others.
Wow.
And it was just a beautiful, beautiful moment.
Wow. Yeah, that is. That is so. Tell us about what you do now. You do so many different things. I'd mentioned you'd held all these different positions. We could probably be here for a couple of hours if we talked about everything. But what is it that you're doing to help people now? You have Heal, Thrive, Dream. And tell us about all of your things that you have to help people now.
Yeah, sure. The thing I'm most proud about, the project I have that I'm the most proud of about, tripping on my words here. My favorite thing
I'm
doing.
Normal, listener. See, she's normal like me. We don't edit this out. And you know, see, that this isn't perfect. We're not perfect. You're not perfect. So you can listen to us and know that it's okay. It's okay to not be perfect.
Yes, I am so far from perfect. Like if you need a perfect coach or therapist. I am so not it. My clients know from the get-go. I'm still working on myself in many ways. So now I forgot the question. I'm sorry.
Oh, what are you doing now? You're talking about the thing you were proudest about of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. After the third child, because I did have one more child when I married my husband, the little boy. Okay. So the project I'm working on the most proud of right now is it's a virtual group community. It's like a membership for trauma survivors. Mm-hmm. And it's very different than most things out there. It's an accountability and support group. So how that works is we're not taking accountability for the trauma that happened to us. We're taking accountability for our healing. Mm-hmm. So each time we get together, we're setting goals on how to heal our childhood, even a baby step. We're taking a step on how to improve the relationships that we're in. It could be a partner, a child, another family member, coworker, friend, etc. Right. And the third area is we work on a dream for the future. Like what purpose do you want to work on? You know, how can you serve your community? You know, what do you want different in your career? What do you want to study? So those buckets really help move the needle baby steps at a time.
Yeah.
So the first part of my group membership, I do coaching. I teach on a different theme. And then the second part is a support group where people can talk and support each other on whatever issues they're facing. I love it. I have about 20 women in there now, but my goal is to grow it to be a really healthy number so we can all support each other more.
Wow. Does it hard to have the discussion and support with so many? Or no, is that just a way it flourishes? 25 seems like it would be difficult for everyone to get a chance to talk. How does it work?
Right. Well, there's a couple different meetings each month. So some people, they're not everybody comes, you know, not everybody can make it, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so it's a hodgepodge of people, and then they can watch the coaching replay because I don't record the support group part.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never felt, there's things I do to make it manageable. Like I do what's called popcorn, where I will pose a question and we'll popcorn style it. Like I start with, hello, my name is Karen and I'm a survivor of, and then I just call on people and they can pass if they don't want to share at that moment, like if they're new.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, if I have something to ask or talk about, I bring it up and it could be popcorn again. And then if there's time at the end, if someone has a burning issue they want to talk about and get support, they bring it up and then the members on their own will give feedback if they want to, you know, suggestions.
Wow.
And it's really powerful. The last meeting, a woman brought up her sister cut her off. Her sister was drinking and had her son in the car and my client. And so when the client didn't know she had been drinking until she started driving erratically, and she said, you know, please pull over. I'm worried about the safety of my son and I, and her sister didn't. And so the client called the police on her and they have a severed relationship. So she talked about what that felt like in the group, and the women, a lot of them had severed relationships with family members. So they supported her through that. It was just beautiful.
Wow. Yeah. To not feel alone going through something like that and how to go through that and reconnect or not reconnect and all the things, because every situation will be different, kind of that.
Yeah.
And to discuss that among other people who really get it. Wow. That is amazing. Wow.
I have one more to share about the support group, if I may.
Sure.
The support group before that, when women said, I'm struggling with my self-worth. Like I know logically I'm good enough, but deep inside, I'm not connected to it. I keep screwing up. And so she was asking other women, how did you build that core belief that I'm worthy? And one of my clients who's near and dear to me, she said, that's the wrong question. She said, stop asking yourself that and focus on being kind to yourself, like really, really kind. And I just thought that was beautiful. You know, they don't even need me. They could just help each other.
Well, they need a moderator, and they wouldn't be there if you hadn't started it, right?
Yeah, it's been really wonderful to
Wow.
see their growth.
Yeah, and you said you have books. What kind of books do you have?
So I have journals and workbooks on Amazon that continue to grow. The books I have, I've contributed as a contributing author. I have not published my own, what is it called? Memoir yet. I'm working on it. And after I publish my memoir, there are a series of books I want to write about trauma recovery. I'm going to do shorter ebooks for that, so they're not so overwhelming to people. But there's different
Yeah.
topics I want to write about. So more
Awesome.
to come on that.
Wonderful. So when can we expect this memoir to come out? Do you have any target date? Or not yet?
Yeah, I've changed it a couple times. I have a little bit of a block on it, a little. So I'm going to say a rough draft by at least by the end of the year, but it could be sooner. It just forcing myself to be consistent with my time is what I need to do. You know.
Yeah, gotcha. I'm just trying to coax you there here. We're telling people about this. So I was like, oh, they know, they know. So is there anything that you want to make sure that our listeners need to hear before we tie this up here?
Yeah, I think if you're listening and you're a survivor, the biggest thing that helps, and it's very biblical, you'll find it all through the Bible, is hope. When you truly have hope and faith in a higher power and in yourself, that's when change can really happen. And so one of the things I've developed is what's called a hope tool, and it's a little exercise that each letter of hope stands for something different, and it's journaling prompts that you can work through, figure out what your passion is, your purpose, and some other hopeful guidance. And so that's a free gift I have for people, and people can get that at healthrivedream.com/get-hope. So you're welcome to that. Thank
And
you.
I will have the link to that in the show notes. So, and you just jumped ahead. How can people connect? And there we have your website. Are you on any other place you want people to connect with you?
Oh, sure. My website is great. It's healthrivedream.com, and my calendar is there if anyone needs it or would like a consult. My podcast and YouTube are other places to find me. It's the Heal Thrive Dream podcast. And yeah, I'm all over social media, Heal Thrive Dream.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing your story with us today, Karen. Thank you for the hope and the encouragement and the vision. I see vision. I mean, you've adopted a daughter in there and yielding to those promptings of the Holy Spirit to do that and to help that man stay out of jail. And then he can see Jesus in people. So thank you for what you do. And thank you for sharing your story today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, look up Karen, get her free hope tool. I will have the link in the show notes for you. And so until next time, I love you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Victorious Souls Podcast. You matter and you are loved. We'd love to connect with you further. So please visit us at danielleburnock.com and grab a copy of Danielle's free audiobook. And remember, only you can change your life. No one can do it for you.